Hello, beautiful people. Welcome to this week's episode of the Montpelier Happy Hour here on WVEW LP Brattleboro. I'm your host and producer of the show, Olga Peters, and this is where we talk about how everything in Montpelier will shake out for the rest of us. And I said will specifically because today, not only do we have the lovely representative Emily Kornheiser joining us, yay! We get to hear from three brand new, elected representatives and hear about their hopes and dreams and all those things as they go into the new legislative session. So without further ado, I would love to welcome to the show Emily Karis Duncan, who will be representing Whitingham, Wilmington, Halifax. Did I forget anyone, Emily?
Nope, that's correct.
All right. And Zahn Eastis, who will be representing Guilford and Vernon, and Ian Goodnow, who will be representing Brattleboro. Welcome, everybody. Before we dive in, I do want to put my first question to Emily Kornheiser. We're going to have to work on this. Emily, as you know, now that you have a few legislative sessions under your belt, thinking back to those glory days when you yourself were a newbie, was there anything you wish people had told you or that you wish you had known going into the session?
I'm all ears.
Yeah, everybody perk up.
Okay, on last week's episode, I talked a little bit about my Decembers and how I'm a little bit too much of a bummer. So I'm going to try not to do that, because one of the reasons I'm so excited about this show is I think one of the most valuable things about having new members join the legislature and the beginning of the biennium is all of the like hope, change, questioning energy that they bring into it, right? Like the reason we do this show, the whole theme of the show is to uncover the stories and the myths that underlie our policymaking, right, Olga? Like that was our whole creation when I was a new member and we started the show 6 years ago.
Oh my gosh, right?
I think one of the things that's like most valuable and brilliant and beautiful about entering the legislature is that you can see those myths so much more clearly than the rest of us. Because we all just like carry on repeating stories to each other about why things are possible or why things are impossible that might have no real connection to actual reality anymore. But we just like, we feed that little story beast amongst ourselves. And you all have this like brilliant opportunity, especially in the first year, to like talk like a normal person, to ask questions that like no one else thinks to ask anymore, and to have hope that you like know something about your community that maybe hasn't been seen or heard before. And that is like such an unbelievable, valuable gift.
Nice. Okay, thank you, Emily. Let's start with Zahn. What are you sitting with right now as you're getting ready to head up to Montpelier in January?
I guess what I would say is I'm seeing this as a remarkable opportunity for a person like me. I mean, I'm not one of these young people sitting here on the stage right now. I'm one of the older folks in town. And yet, at this point in my life, with the recent turn of events, my wife died about 6 months ago, I'm having this remarkable opportunity to enter into this space that is, I think, going to be, for me, magical. So it's also a lot to learn. There's so much to learn. And I have met a lot of people in my two towns, my Guilford and Vernon. And I think I have a handle on what's troubling people, what are concerns, what are hopes, what are visions. I'm sure I'll be learning as I go along. And I'm sure I'm not going to hit the mark every single time. But I'm just really excited for the opportunity to meet and connect with so many people and really try to work hard at bringing some solutions to some very difficult problems that I think there's broad agreement for, as I understand it now. There's broad agreement about increases in taxes. There's broad agreement, I think, about the education funding structures, not what they should be, but that there are problems with them. There's broad agreement about housing. And I think there's just a lot to work on. So I'm really ready to get to work.
Emily Karis Duncan, I see you in a very interesting position because your dad was a lawmaker was in the legislature, excuse me. And yet, so you're kind of a second generation legislature, and yet you're not your dad, and this is not the time period that, you're not operating in the same time period. The state has changed since you have both served. So it's still new and fresh. And so I'm curious for you, what are you sitting with? Are you balancing your dad's legacy at all, or does it feel like a completely new thing for you? Just curious.
I would say I am. It's interesting. I've not heard that question about balancing his legacy. I guess I would say I am. I'm listening to a lot of what his sort of like generalized sage advice is about leading with integrity and listening and just being open and communicating. So those are things I'm really taking to heart. And as far as just like what I'm sitting with in this moment is just, well, one, I do sit with the significance of this role of being able to be, who I am in this community as, Black and queer and an artist going into this legislative space that, I mean, and Zahn can also attest to this, is not, artists are not normally the people that are doing the but I do think that we bring an interesting and fresh and like very connected web-like perspective that connects a lot of different dots. So I'm sitting with all of that, and then also just being like, this is, we have a lot of cross currents that we're going to be dealing with, and this is going to be a really, it feels like a very big kind of pivotal moment. So I'm very excited to get involved and to see what we can do, what kind of solutions we can make, because it, like to Zahn's point, the agreement is there on the problems. I think finding the solutions is going to be a whole conversation, but it's good to at least go in with that as a baseline, and at least we're not completely on opposite ends on what the priorities are.
It's a good point. Ian, same to you. What are you sitting with as you're getting ready to go to Montpelier?
I need a haircut.
Really practical, pragmatic things.
I don't want to repeat my colleague, but I think I'm sitting with nerves and anticipation, knowing that Vermonters across the state, but more specifically my fellow Brattleboroites, have a lot of expectation for this session and for this biennium. Because yeah, I think the issues are really clear, which I guess is like part of the work is to figure out what the issues are. And so the fact that some of them are pretty clear, but then, what are we going to do about it? So yeah, it feels a lot like when I get ready to go to court, the butterflies and the nerves and the anxiety kind of are overwhelming, and that forces you to focus and to prepare. But then at some point you get to a place where it's like, okay, I'm ready for this to start. And I'm right about there. I go into the breakfasts and listening to my constituents and people who are knowledgeable about the areas that we're going to be working in. And I'm ready to actually go up to Montpelier, get to work, and start the session.
Okay, thank you. We'll start with Ian, and then I'll
Oh, good.
Before you go into another round, I just want to say the haircut thing is real. Like there's all of these big, bold, beautiful democracy things. And then there's the fact that the pattern of our lives is about to shift, right? Like we're about to be out of town 4 to 5 days a week. And so there's getting the haircut and there's picking the hemmed pants up if you can't hem your own pants like me. And going, I have a dentist appointment on Friday, making sure that all my heating systems work so my pipes don't freeze, right? We're also about to start a whole new pattern of life in January, which is sort of like a beautiful time to start a new rhythm and also like the deepness of winter. And so it's a all of that is like really new and exciting too.
Have you found anyone to shovel your walkway when you're gone?
I have not, but I suppose this is a public offering request for volunteers. Anyone wants to come by?
Before I go back to my question, we should probably pause there, Emily Kornheiser, and just see Do you have a checklist? When you're getting ready to go to Montpelier, talking, kind of keeping it in the haircut vein, like you make sure the trash is out, you make sure the thing is changed on the voicemail. I don't know. Do you have like a little checklist you go through? Oh, you're
I have
on.
like obsessive Post-it note lists, but I don't have like one that I come back to over and over again. That would be a level of organization that apparently is beyond even my spreadsheet loving self. But I think Don might have a something he wants to add here.
I'm trying to build. I don't have any idea. I need someone to take my beautiful cat. I can't take care of my cat anymore. So that's a very real one for me. So yeah, that's where the issues I'm on right now. So yeah.
I love the idea of this podcast just becoming like 30 minutes of us just like asking the public
Yeah, I think eventually we'll start asking really important questions, but for now, it's important to take care of my cat, so.
first, Zahn's cat. What are we gonna do about
Right.
Zahn's cat?
That
In
is an
my
important
shoveling.
thing.
I actually have a dear friend who a couple of years ago was like, "So do people bring you chickens?" And I was like, "Chickens?" And she was like, "Yeah, do people bring you chickens and baskets?" And I was like, "No, it's not 1923, sweetheart. Like, no one's bringing me chickens in a basket. What are you talking about?" And she was like, "Like for your service, your neighbors." And I was like, "No, there are no chickens in the baskets." But like now, whenever she buys me dinner, she's like, "Here's your chicken, honey."
Oh, that's right.
But it's, I think to do this work, it takes like a whole, it does take the whole community sort of like showing up to both
Sure.
support us and us to support them. It's a very, I think it's a more mutual activity than we always give credit for. And so I think it's important to highlight the problems of the cats and the opportunities in how we also like take care of each other as legislators.
I'm sorry, Zahn. I can't take a cat right now, or I would totally take your cat because I love kitties. So
We're all good. I'm,
I'll keep my ear to the ground.
please.
Emily, Karis Duncan, I'm wondering for you, what are you hearing from your community? What issues will be on the top of your mind when you go to Montpelier?
Taxes.
That's
Yeah.
like a proverbial one in Whittingham, man.
Yeah, it's taxes and education and how it's the trifecta of taxes, education, and housing. Yeah, it's really, it's tight down here. It's tight all over the place, and trying to like loosen up that tangle. The thing that kind of blew me away was how many folks were very attuned to the fact that tourism is an important driver of our economy. So it's not that the impulse is just like keep everybody out. But it's more of just like, how do we find a balance for the folks that are here maintaining this place and quote unquote living the vacation?
I think that's really key as someone who grew up in the Deerfield Valley. I really hear that. And that tension, at least for me, I don't know about for you, Emily Karis Duncan, but just I grew up in the tourist economy. My dad ran an inn and a restaurant, and I grew up working in like the local gift shops, but now I don't work in the tourist economy. Like I'm outside of it, and just watching those kind of different economies working in this valley, and not working sometimes, I find really fascinating. So I don't know, about you.
Yeah, no, I think it is very interesting the way that they kind of work in parallel to each other and are constantly in conversation with each other, sometimes overlapping and sometimes not. But also, understanding the kind of buy-in from each side into each economy, Because, like, the work that you do keeps the people on the ground well informed. And then that allows them, right, to like be able to do their work and to be engaged citizens more broadly. So that's like very important. Yeah. So just I think, and that is so Vermont. Like, we are very interdependent. You can't live here and not be. And I think because of the last, 10 years of like major political divide, kind of nationally, it makes it very hard to run a state like this with that level of entrenched divide.
Good point. I always call that, we don't have enough people rowing the boat, so we
Right.
have to make sure we're all going in the same direction.
Right.
Ian, how about you? What are you hearing from your community, and what issues will be at the top of your mind?
Oh, Brattleboro has been pretty quiet.
Oh,
No.
Brad, yeah, it's
Well,
so quiet.
yeah. Affordability is a huge one, you know, for people who want to. People are what I've been hearing in my community is like that people are trying to live here and they have their lives haven't changed, but their ability to stay here and afford to stay here has changed. And that their income and the expenses, that the costs, the real costs to live in Vermont are just going up at a rate that doesn't feel sustainable across the board. And I think that is really scary. And so I think there is a lot of fear that I've heard. And also, more recently, just how is the new federal administration going to impact Vermont? And what are we going to need to do differently to tackle the challenges that Vermont's facing based on what's going to happen on the federal level? And that's like for environment, for education, I think like across the board. And we don't really know yet. Or at least we could probably have some inkling into it, but we don't know yet until, you know, the next administration takes over. So yeah, so there's anxiety and anticipation and fear is a lot unfortunate. And I don't say that to try to sound negative, because I don't feel pessimistic about this next session. I think it's really positive that there seems to be, as Zahn was mentioning, like a lot of agreement across the board about what issues Vermonters want us to be working on this session. I really just report it because it's the reality. And I think knowing how your community is feeling is like the first step. Yeah, you know, one of the things that I'm anxious about for this session for myself is being able to bring back information and knowledge to my constituents to try to alleviate some of that concern and fear, and hopefully being effective at that, which is not something that I've really had a lot of experience in the past, because on the select board level, things people people know the questions to ask, and they're pretty informed a lot of the time. So I don't know if that answers your question there, Olga.
Yeah, it does. Thank you. Emily Kornheiser, what do you want to jump in? Any questions or thoughts?
I've been thinking a lot about, especially in this context of not knowing what the new administration will bring and making guesses based on like tweets and I don't know, people's terrified imaginations. And also like the problems that feel more expected being really complex problems that are facing the whole nation, right? And so, in that context, I've been thinking a lot about how I think a lot of us become legislators because we're problem solvers, and how to maybe reframe my work as that of a facilitator, which is my actual profession, but somehow in the context of the way power works in the legislature and the way that power works in America, and like, you know, the media stories of the quest or the hero or whatever that, you know, whatever. Gosh, it's like 9 o'clock in the morning and I'm talking about Jungian archetypes. I'm so sorry, everyone. But I think I've been thinking a lot about what it takes to sort of shift from those archetypes of like heroes and problem solvers and all of that into like facilitator, collaborator, listener, and what that means in the context of democracy and solving the really wicked problems ahead of us.
Thank you.
That's not a question, but that's my random 9 o'clock in the morning thoughts today on.
Well, what it brings me back to is a question that came up as you were talking earlier in this section, saying that one of the gifts Ian and Emily and Zahn will bring to the new session is being able to see the stories fresh. And it made me wonder, you know, in the State House, what's the line between stories and tradition? Right? There's a lot of things that happen in the State House because it's tradition. But, you know, are the stories that fuel that tradition, you know, beneficial? Is it like, I don't know. I'm always fascinated between like tradition and stories and where they divide or where they come together.
I mean, I'm curious to hear everyone's thoughts on this, but sort of off the bat, one example that I think of is before I became a legislator, I would rail against Robert's Rules of Order. Like, okay, like super nerd that I like was just like in my free time railing against the Robert's Rules of Order, but like I felt very clear that it was excluding and exclusive and just like another tool of the patriarchy to keep people down. And that felt like very, very, very clear to me. And felt sort of similarly about dress codes and like just sort of all of these sort of rules of conduct and formality that we have in the legislature. We don't use Robert's rules, we use Mason's rules, but it's all sort of the same at the end of the day. And then sort of joined the legislature, was told that those were sort of important sacred traditions, and that was the story of it, is that we did it because that's sort of the way things had always been done, and it was part of like living and working in a museum, and the chairs were uncomfortable, and I just sort of like still wanted to like blow everything up, but I had no power and like wasn't, you know, sort of new enough to not be ranting all the time. And it became really clear to me after like watching 6 years of debate and people operating in the building that a level of formality actually keeps us from getting in fist fights with each other when we disagree, right? Like the level, like putting on my legislative drag outfit, sitting in an unbelievably uncomfortable chair, and having to follow a structure where I speak through a speaker and not to someone I disagree with, actually enables me to engage in a level of difficult dialogue that would be incredibly personal. Too personal if it wasn't. Because I would personalize it not just about me and my constituents, but about the other person who's saying the other thing. And that's sort of like one of the places where I think the story, the tradition, and the reality all get blended together. I personally like have questions like 6 years in, am I just like a total sellout sucker now that I believe this stuff? Or have I learned something true about the world? Probably a combination of the two. I don't know.
Emily, Karis Duncan, I know both you and Emily Kornheiser need to leave at 10, so I want to turn this question over to you before you have to go. A theme has been coming up in our recent conversations here on the Happy Hour about the state motto of freedom and unity. And I think what Emily just brought up kind of highlighted that a little bit. So just out of curiosity for you, when you hear that phrase, freedom and unity, what does that mean for you?
Oh, I love it. I love it so much because it speaks to like a thing that I long to achieve organizationally in my life, both in my work and as just a human. It's about like having really, I love good boundaries, like good boundaries, tight structure, maximal freedom. Like
Nice.
I love knowing, I'm like, oh, I know where that ends. And even if that goalpost moves, like I have the ability to stretch myself to get there. Like, I get it. But within that, you know, you can do whatever you want within that little box. And I think that, like, I also agree with Emily. I come from a tradition of deeply questioning power and deeply questioning structures and being very mindful of where the inequities are within those structures. But I also am a sucker for structures because they can really, like, they become very helpful. I mean, the question is like about the inputs into those structures is, you know, who's at the table to craft those structures to begin with? Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, we are just about to hear from some underwriters, but before we do, Emily Karis Duncan, Emily Kornheiser, anything you want to leave listeners with? How about we'll start with Emily Karis Duncan?
This has been a treat to be here, and I'm really excited to get to work on all of these issues. Yeah.
Emily Kornheiser?
I just hope that our listeners and these three incredible new members, constituents, like feel very open to like having conversations with each other and with their legislators. Like, it's so exciting to have so many new members of the Windham County delegation, and I hope that like folks will keep on showing up and asking them questions and sharing their lives with them and making the democracy possible.
Well, on that note, the Montpelier Happy Hour on WVEWLP Brattleboro is going to take a quick break to hear from some of our underwriters, and then Zahn, Ian, and I shall return. So stay tuned, folks. The Montpelier Happy Hour here on WVEW LP Brattleboro. I'm your host and producer of the show, Olga Peters, and I've been speaking with Emily Kornheiser, Emily Karis Duncan, who unfortunately had to leave before the break, and now we are speaking with Zahn Estes and Ian Goodnow. And for those who don't know, Ian and Zahn are newly elected members of the Windham County delegation to Montpelier and will be starting their first session in January. Before we dive back into our conversation, I just want to thank BCTV for taking the video version of our show, sharing it with media centers around Vermont, and the views and opinions of those on the Montpelier Happy Hour are those of the hosts and the guests and no one else. Not their pets, not their family members, not their place of business, not the platforms, nobody, just us. So feel free to send an email to the Montpelier Happy Hour at gmail.com if you have issues with that. Ian and Zahn, thank you for being here.
Before yeah, Zahn, we got to be interesting enough to carry the second half of this show.
Yeah. I trust completely. I'm not sure.
So before the break, you know, I asked Emily Karis Duncan that question that has been coming up as a regular theme in the happy hour lately, which is, you know, when you hear the state motto, freedom and unity, what does that mean to you? And I think now that you are heading into becoming representatives, it's even one step higher, is like, how are you going to live that? So who would like to jump on that one first? Zahn, Ian? Go for it, Zahn.
I have a thing or two I could say. So yeah. Well, what I love, and I'm sure Ian will too, no problem. What I love about the idea of freedom and unity is that it's a conundrum in of itself. It's almost like the picture of how Vermonters lived historically, in the sense that many people came to Vermont, I think, originally because not only is it a beautiful place, but it was rich with farmland, and there was an opportunity for people, families, to grow and thrive here in a way they wanted to. And that just the way Vermont has developed over the years, there are a lot of very small communities, a lot of people living out in the land in a really wonderful way. I think it's what makes Vermont very attractive. But then comes winter. And it's really hard, was really hard back in the day, I think, for people to live entirely alone, entirely on their own. And so people needed one another in order to make things work. And I think that the framers of the state of Vermont figured that out very early, that yes, the idea is to as Emily, what did she say, maximal freedom? You know, there's a lot of freedom to live the way we want to live, but we can't do it without one another. And I think that what one of the issues that I'm hearing as I go up to Montpelier and listen to folks talk is that with the climate change, with advances in the 21st century, and the fact that our population is growing and changing, that it's not to say that we're going to lose track of freedom, our notions of individual freedom, but we may need to lean a little bit more into our notions of community and unity and how we're doing this all together. Mm-hmm. And not just okay for us to live entirely separately, not that we ever live that way, but leaning in that direction. So I hear the notions of some of these big issues, like how do we fund education? What about taxes? What about housing? How are we going to make that work in the state of Vermont? Some of the solutions are likely to come from how is it do we live together? Mm-hmm. How is it that we function together rather than how can we do this all apart from one another? And I'm not sure what that means. And I'm really interested in listening and hearing and talking to people and finding the best solutions possible.
Ian, how about you? What's your response?
Well put, Zahn. Yeah, I think, again, not to repeat either Emily or Zahn's points, which I think are both really excellent and totally parts of thinking about the motto. Yeah, I think for me, it's just sort of, it is the beautiful balance of the values that Vermonters hold of both individual freedom and an ability to sort of like be independent, but then also basically anybody you talk to in Vermont talks about the beauty of the communities that we have and the ability for these communities to come together. And in fact, the some of the concerns that I'm hearing about, especially education, where, you know, the idea of school closings and things like that, where you have centers of the community and what would a community look like without those traditional centers. And so I think when I think about the motto, it's a lot about that equilibrium, like the balance that you have to establish to protect both and not let one overcome the other. And it's tricky. And I feel like there are times in our lives where, you know, one moves over the other. And there are certainly times in our legislative process where one has moved over the other, but it's our job to strike the balance.
Yeah, I think one of the ways I was raised in that concept of freedom and unity is, to Zahn's point about winter, having slipped on the ice in my driveway yesterday, I'll tell you, winter is still hard. But that concept of that very practical concept of, if you're driving home at night and your neighbor's car is in a snowbank, doesn't matter if you like that neighbor or not, you stop and you see if they need a ride. Right. And that, you know, who shows up to bring the lemon squares to the funeral, and who shows up to the potluck, and that sort of thing, are some of, I think, the just the daily ways we live that concept. I don't envy you the tough job of balancing that in policy, because sometimes what's good for the group may not be good for the individual, and vice versa. And so that's no small feat.
And I think if I can just jump in on one other part of it, something else that Zahn and I and the rest of the legislative delegation from Windham County and the rest of the legislators in Vermont are going to have to work on is the unity of the House and of the Senate and of bipartisan cooperation to get these issues addressed. You know, the result of the elections in November are a much more divided House, but it doesn't have to be divided, you know? And I think that I'm very optimistic about the conversations that I'm hearing about people wanting to work together, you know, cross party line and, you know, work for Vermonters. Now, if that's actually what happens, I'm sure we'll come back in May, Olga, and have a conversation about it. But yeah, that's like another way of thinking about that motto as well, is your the freedom to do your individual work as a legislature versus, you know, the unity that is so critical to being one member of a statewide governmental body that's got to work for everybody. And so yeah, and I've thought a lot about that too, moving to Montpelier, of like, I represent Brattleboro, one third of Brattleboro, beautiful downtown Brattleboro. But I also am going to be part of a body that's got to take care of every beautiful downtown. So that's it's a balance. Again, it's just a balance, and I'm thinking a lot about that.
I love that you said that, Ian, because, you know, in the beginning of the show, Emily was talking about some storytelling structures, like the hero's journey and that type of thing. And as someone who is a fiction writer in the other part of her life, I work with those structures, and depending on the story I'm telling, I might use the hero's journey, I might use something else. But what I've always said as a writer is, I don't want my democracy to be a Hollywood montage. And the reason, and that is usually the hero's journey, you know, one person striving ahead, and it, you know, great music, everything looks easy, everything comes together, woohoo, the montage. We all love our Hollywood montages. But when you really think about it, our political system was not made to be a Hollywood montage. It wasn't really made for the hero's journey. It was made for a collective to come together with different points of view, hash things out, and then hopefully come up with a policy that serves as many people as possible. You know, and to me, they feel like very different things. But I think we forget that in our wider collective conscious because the hero's journey is so much an easier story to tell, where building policy is messy and complex, and you've got laws and existing laws and new laws, and they're all kind of hashed together on the table. Did I lose you, Ian? You look confused. Oh, sorry, Zahn.
No, not at all. No, I'm just thinking.
Zahn, go ahead.
I agree. I'm listening to what you're saying. Oh, again, it's making me think that one of the things that I've experienced as being on the select board in Guilford and then now learning and talking with folks a little bit in our preparations to go to the State House, I would say, as a general rule, that Vermont law and the statutes are more easily tested by individuals. And so there's a lot of protections for individuals in the state of Vermont, which is absolutely what we want. There's no question that we want it. But because many times in proceedings that move forward, those are brought forward by individuals who want to live their own independent lives, and they're bringing, and so there's a lot of, I've discovered a lot of statute that really focuses on protecting the individual, and I agree that 100%. However, there I would say in balance that there isn't the same kind of set of protections necessarily, or similar weights of protections for collections of people in our in my community, and I'm hearing stories across the state where it's similar like that. And so I think that in America, we're so comfortable with the cowboy story. We're so
We
comfortable
really
with
are.
the rights of the individual, and we think that way, we move that way. And so a lot of the actions that actually shape our statute are driven by that kind of mindset. And while I think it's important, please don't get me wrong, I think it's also important to always bear in mind the communities in which we live. And there are many different kinds of communities. And so, what are the rights and the privileges of those communities in the balance of a state like Vermont? And I find that whole arena very interesting to talk about.
Ian, anything you want to add?
No, I think, yeah, we're pretty abstract. So I'm trying to sort of think about it in, so like Zahn, you mean kind of like a community could be like an actual like municipality, like that kind of group of. Well, that, and I mean, like you, so you and I have both chaired our select boards, and congratulations, you've just stepped away, right?
That's correct.
So, you know, we both know the experience of living in a Dillon's rule state where, you know, so much of what we can do is dictated by our state government. And at sometimes that can feel really restricting. And I know at least in Brattleboro, we've really rubbed up against that border and tried hard to push back against it, and sometimes successfully, like the youth vote, and many times unsuccessfully. And we're currently looking at our charter to do charter revisions, which will, because we live in a Dillon's rule state, require this the legislature to approve it. And there are reasons why that's good, and there are reasons why that's very frustrating and difficult and can feel very almost anti-democratic. And so yeah, that's a I guess what I'm trying to say is I really agree with you, Zahn and Olga, that yeah, it's a tricky balance, and it's really important to, you know, try to keep them all in hand when you're thinking about who you're protecting and why and with what laws.
I think one very practical thing both of you will be dealing with when you go to Montpelier is this is something I have seen for a long time, but I'm hearing it become much more distinct. And that is that tension. I guess it's a little bit freedom and unity tension too, or Dillon's rule and local rule, but that tension between Vermont having an economy of scale, so things coming from like the state level down, versus individual town needs. And I would add to that of individual town needs, I would add on top of that rural versus urban needs. Because I think, Ian, I don't think you were around when there were some changes made to the Wyndham solid waste. Brattleboro had some needs, and those were very definite needs. because they had the highest population around trash and recycling, that type of thing. But the changes, I think, in the end, benefited Brattleboro perhaps more than the collective that Brattleboro had been a part of at the time. And I think that is becoming more and more, people are feeling that more and more, that kind of like, what does a rural community need versus what does an urban community need? And I realize I say that about a very rural state. and I'm not saying it to be like either or pitting communities against each other. It's feeling more and more real to people, I think.
No, I think you're right.
Yeah, and I think what really sounds like what we're talking around a little bit is discussions around regional government.
So there you go.
And that's, I think, with the emergency issues that we've have faced with the flooding over the last 2 years, and just generally the way that federal funding works, the discussions around regional countywide government are things I'm already hearing about, and I don't know anything. And yeah, I've basically lived my whole life in Vermont, and it's never seemed like something like a county government would ever be a thing. But now, yeah, there's like serious discussion about it. And that could really go towards these questions of rural and more urban areas, and how are those populations being represented? How are their voices being heard, and at what levels are they being heard? Because there's a big gap right now, right? Like between a small town with a little municipal budget and a board of aldermen or something, and then the state. And like, yeah, that's yeah. So I'll be very curious to see where that discussion goes. I don't know if it's something that is going to like happen in this session or if it'll happen at all. But I think it's really relevant to the emergency funding issue and how communities access those federal funds.
I think it will really show up too in some of the changes we've made around Act 250 and the redrawing of land use and land use maps. I don't know if it will be good or bad or in between, but it's something that's one thing I'll be watching. I think will be an interesting development. Zahn, what are you thinking about right now?
Well, I'm right there with you. I mean, I was going to say the same, that regionalism was the word that was in my head too. Not that I'm a proponent at all, but I think it's something that the legislature will definitely be asked, forced to address in lots of different ways. Not only in the ways you're talking, but the education question. I've already heard people talking about it. There is some regionalism already in the state, and some parts of the state are put together in school regions, you might call them districts, that are larger than towns. Emergency issues, healthcare issues, safety issues. There are just any number of those kinds of questions. And as Ian speaks, the way federal funding, the big example for me being on the Guilford Select Board was when the ARPA dollars came, the American Rescue Plan Act dollars came down into Vermont. They came into Vermont in a different way than they went into a lot of the states around the country, in that those went into counties, in most places in the nation. But in Vermont, we don't have a system that could even accept those dollars. So we ended up getting ARPA dollars into over 250 communities in this state, and each community developed its own particular system for how it was going to be getting those dollars out. I mean, I have to trust Vermonters that those dollars went out in the best possible ways in those communities. But talk about inefficiency. And when there were questions about what are we supposed to do? Well, how are we supposed to report? I mean, there weren't even systems really set up in the state. And there couldn't be really the way Vermont does it. It just really, it didn't work as readily and easily and comfortably as it might. And granted, a lot of people got benefit. And I think I know in my community, a lot of people were helped. So it's not to take away from that at all. It's just a very complicated set of issues here.
And if I can piggyback on that, absolutely. I totally agree. And the 2 points I take from that too is that one, without spreading that ARPA money out to all those little communities, prevented there ever being even a conversation about a way to use that money more collectively in a more effective way. I don't know if that would have been the right thing to do. And you're totally right that many communities use those ARPA funds in really good ways. And I still are, but there was just never even a conversation about it. And so I think that's very real. And another thing is, I just want to agree, Zahn, that there already is regional government happening, but it's not consistent.
Yes, exactly. That's
And
a good point.
it's not consistent across the state, and it's not consistent in how the funding is, spread and how well it's supported. So that's, and if anything, consistency, I feel like, is a big part of the urban rural question, and how funds are actually making their ways to communities across the state in a way that's fair and equitable, and how people are advocating for those funds.
I'll
That's a
stay.
really good point, Ian.
100%, Ian. I hear what you're saying, and it strikes me that one of the quickest ways to move fear into communities is to have these inequities staring at everyone, but not a lot of clarity about describing the situation and inability. We can't even, as you described with the ARPA dollars, we can't even really talk to each other in an effective way to sort of make it clear how we're doing this in a regional or statewide way. It can be really tricky. So again, not to say that I'm all for regionalism, but I think that there are some mechanisms that we're going to be looking at that might make things a little clearer, a little bit more, or we have an opportunity for that anyway.
Yeah, I think that's one thing a lot of folks don't realize about serving in a public position, like a select board, like the state, like the school board, is one of the beauties of our system is that anyone can run for government and serve their community. The flip side of that is not everyone has the same skill set for
Absolutely.
moving through policy and moving through leadership. And I think I really see that as a reporter, depending on what town I go to, and it doesn't always matter what size the town is, you have some folks who have a lot of skills when it comes to managing a municipality. And then you have some select boards that really aren't skilled, and it can feel very Wild West when you visit those select board meetings. For example, I'm going to pick on my town for a minute. Because, like, you go to a Brattleboro select board meeting and the board's sitting there, they're talking to the audience, BCTV is there filming things. Like, it's a really standardized, very professional type of meeting.
Well,
And
that's when I was chairing it, Olga.
yeah, of course. Yeah, who knows what it's going to be now? It might just be, food fights.
Daniel's doing a great job. Sorry, go ahead.
But I really appreciate the work my select board does, and I'm not gonna slag off their work, but I went to a meeting and basically they were sitting in a round table with their back to anyone who had shown up, and they're basically talking at each other and mumbling. So
Oh
you
boy.
kind of couldn't hear the majority of the meeting, and it's just because they haven't had to. They haven't had to work with the public in the same way. But I think it illustrates Ian's point about consistency and how a lot of our systems, while every town might be working with the same system, it's not being carried out in the same way. Which I think also goes back to some of the things Emily Caris Duncan was saying about structure in the first half.
Absolutely. Yeah, to like bring it all the way back around, right? That consistency and structure and make sure people's voices aren't lost if the structure is equitable and clear. I think that's the other thing too, making sure. And that's something that didn't really come up in the first half, but that's something I'm thinking a lot about is how clear all the structures are in the legislature for individual representatives and senators when they step in as a new member, like how all that information is sort of downloaded into your head about what those structures are and traditions.
That's a really good point, Ian. It's on.
Yeah, for me, it's tricky because we've been downloaded. I feel like I've been downloaded with a lot of stuff, some very impressive staffs that we've learned about at the state. Remarkable people that have been very thoughtful in their presentations. And then there are whole pieces of what we're walking into that we know nothing about. And we won't know anything about until the drop of the first day. And then boom, as soon as that happens, all this stuff's supposed to start working. And I don't even know how it works. So I'm sure that's going to be a little bit helter-skelter on the first day. And it'll probably settle in real quickly. They're all comfortable with it and it works pretty well. But there's a lot of unknowns at the beginning. Like we don't know, for instance, maybe Ian knows, but I don't know which committee I'm going to be on yet. And so I
Yeah,
can't
and you
really
won't for a while.
thinking about where, how I'm going to be organizing my thinking, where my focus is going to be. I'll find out on the first day, and then I'll be expected to be a member of that committee and move forward. And woo, that feels pretty impressive.
I don't know what committee I'm on.
It's okay. Nobody's being left out at this point.
So it's a, you know, it's a, it's just interesting that, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. You know, Zahn, Ian, unfortunately, we are out of time, but as always, it's lovely to talk to both of you. Before we go, I just want to do a little round robin of what we're sitting with right now. For me, what I'm sitting with is something you both said at the beginning of the show about how most communities tend to agree on what the problems are, and it'll be finding the solutions that'll be interesting. And that just brings back to me, you know, definitions, that concept of definitions, that everybody might be looking at the same problem. Or the example I often use is like the governor talks about affordability. So does Emily. But you know what? When they say affordability, they're not talking about the same things. So that's kind of what I'm sitting with now is like, how do we move forward and not only make sure we agree on the problem, but like the definition of the problem? I'd love to hear from both of you just now that we've had this conversation, what are you sitting with?
I'll just say quickly, I'm sure Ian has thoughts that that's right. I've heard in a couple of different meetings I have been to already that one of the first things that needs to happen is we need to get clear definition about what it is we're talking about. So when we say this word, we know we can trust that we're all talking about it the same way, because there's nothing worse than we're all talking about a word and then much later we find out, oh, you meant that? I thought I meant this, you know, and it then you're just nowhere. So I hope to that there'll be some energy put into just that kind of work, that that's actually part of the discipline, part of the structuring of the work we need to make sure that there was a presumption. This is maybe an overstatement, but I feel like there might have been a bit of a presumption in the previous biennium because of the supermajority that the Democrats could just talk the way they wanted and things would go a certain way. Well, that supermajority is gone, so that assumption's not available any longer. I think now there's going to need to be across the aisle work to make things really move forward. And I think there's a commitment to it, judging from the class that Ian and I are entering with. It feels to me like there's a really a strong interest in working together to solve some of these issues. But what are those issues and how you define them is going to be interesting. Yeah.
Thank you, Zahn. Ian.
As we're running out of time, I totally agree. We have the opportunity and the advantage of having some clarity on at least what the issues are. How do we take advantage of that so that we can have an effective session? It certainly involves making sure that we're defining what the issues are clearly, and as we move forward, what the potential solutions are as well. And that, you know, all I hear is communication, that we're going to have to make sure that we're communicating well with our fellow legislators, with our members of the other parties, with the other House and the Senate, and with the executive. And so the Vermont government's going to have to step up and keep that communicating happening so that we can end this session with some results for Vermonters, because that's what they need.
Well, Zahn Eastis, Ian Goodnow, thank you so much for being on the show today. Good luck going into the new session. If people want to reach out to you, how can they do that?
Oh, email me at, are we using, Zahn, do you know if we're using our legislative emails or our, which email?
Either one, but
Yeah.
the emails.
I think the legislative email is the one that makes the most sense. So it's igoodnow, GODNOW at, and this is the first time I've done this out loud. So is it ledge, LEG dot state dot DT dot US?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. Yeah. You'll be able to find it online. And then he gave me up on all the socials, you know, it's my name. Yeah, it's not too
Probably
difficult.
yeah, it might be the easiest way is Google our names, and I'm sure there's a way to find
Yes.
some way to reach us. Yeah, we each have websites, but I think that yeah, that and it's consistent. That's one nice thing that's consistent at the State House is that like mine is Z Eastis, EASTES at ledge.state.vt.us.
So when you get the flood of emails about your cat, do you want those to go to your legislative?
Well, we'll see. Somebody will love Lulu. She's a real dream of a cat, but I just can't. I can't put her through that for the next couple of years. So
Okay, come on, Vermont, for Lulu.
yes, let's find a new loving home for Lulu. So, on that note, the Montpelier Happy Hour says thank you to everyone. Thank you to listeners for tuning in. We're on WVEW LP Brattleboro every Friday at 2, rebroadcasted on Wednesday morning, and of course, wherever you subscribe to your podcasts. Take care, everyone, and have a good week.